Hello again, basketball gamers, and welcome to episode number 242 of the NLSC podcast. I'm Andrew, I'm with you as always. With me as always is Ben, also known in the forum as Arcane.
Hey everyone.
And we're back for yet another week. Haven't missed a week yet this year, which has been our goal to not break the streak so far this year. Back again to talk about basketball video games, as we always do, and a little bit of real basketball as well. It's still months out from the preview season, of course, so no real news to talk about, but a couple of interesting topics related to basketball gaming this week, Ben.
Yeah.
With regards to the future of features and what Live and 2K can do in terms of goodwill and transparency. And to that end, we're going to tip things off with a discussion that was suggested by one of our listeners, MP3. Shout out to you, Mike, for listening, as you always do. And basically, it's about gambling in basketball games. And it's actually a topic that's related to video games in general these days, especially with loot crates and other kinds of in-game content and DLC and microtransactions, that kind of thing. And there's been a big debate, Ben, about whether all that actually constitutes gambling in games. And of course, that is a very contentious issue because games, obviously, we are over the age of 18, significantly. In fact, scarily, we're both closer to 40 than we are 18. So... Yeah. We won't get into that too much at this
time. Well, actually, double the age. Yeah,
you are indeed. Yeah, I'm almost there. So we are obviously legally adults, if not mentally, I suppose, and maybe more income than your average 18-year-old. I would like to think in most cases, but the point is that a lot of younger kids under the age of 18, of course, are playing video games, and with all these microtransactions and other content that could constitute gambling, that is actually putting gambling mechanics in the hands of kids and underage gamers, and I guess encouraging the possibility of gambling as well, and that's been a big controversy.
Yeah, I can definitely see it, definitely. Well, I think it is essentially that in a lot of cases. I think, given how some games like Overwatch, I'll say this: I think Live has, like we've stated, does have a good system in that you can actually see what the rewards are. The rewards in this sense with the loot boxes aren't, you can't buy with actual cash or real cash or real money. You earn it in that sort of sense with wins. The wins aren't hard to obtain in a sense, you know, with essentially varied amounts of mini games and stuff like that to do it, or short games, not full like hour long games to do it. So it is achievable to obtain. Like what we've stated, like you can actually see what the rewards are. You know, you can decide, well, if there's anything of your interest, it's like, well, I might play a few games to try and get such and such item, because that item, you know, is something that I'm interested in getting. So that is one aspect that again, you know, is a positive in that sense. But I do think in the overall big picture of it, yeah, still essentially an element of gambling. Risk and reward sort of tendencies and stuff like that. With microtransactions and stuff like that, yes. I think any time when you'd have to essentially give credit card details, or, you know, using the the store-bought cards in that sort of sense, you know, to like credit in that sort of sense to do it, you know, in that sense, to buy items or level up in a lot of cases and stuff like that. I think that is when it really crosses that line in that sense. But
it is obviously, as we said, it's a very much a gambling type mechanic with either the loot crates or card packs, for example, in the team building modes. You're basically going by the luck of the draw there, and it dances the line, I think, as far as I don't think they're going to be able to outlaw it as such, or it's going to be very difficult to legislate against it. But one thing that's been suggested is the idea of having in-game warnings. Like, you know, if you go to anywhere where there's gambling, like a pub.
Gamble responsibility.
Yeah, a pub or a club. You'll see on the poker machine or the Keno or whatever you're playing, the odds of winning, etc., have to be displayed, and the gamble responsibly, and, you know, do you have a problem? Here is the Gamblers Anonymous line, or whatever that whatever it's called here. There are warnings to say, you know, the chances of winning are this, but basically covering themselves as much as possible, and also keeping people informed and saying this is the realistic odds you have of winning, which, you know, the thing of Star Wars, don't tell me the odds. unfortunately, for people who have a problem with gambling, they don't want to know the odds, but certainly the possibility of putting that warning in game, and even not so much about from a gambling point of view, but just simply for a transparency point of view, which, well, I suppose it comes back to the gambling, but certainly in fairness and transparency for things like the card packs in Ultimate Team and my team, just the odds of pulling a certain player. Like, we've talked before about the throwback packs, which I don't like for a start, because you have a small chance of getting a throwback player instead of the legend packs in Live, where you definitely get a legend player. It may not be the legend player that you want, but you will get a player that's one of the featured legends of that week, whereas with the throwback packs, you just have the small chance. Well, what is that chance? You know, what is the percentage? What are the odds? Those aren't actually listed. It's just a very vague, you've got a small chance. Well, is that 1%? Is that 0.0005%? It certainly feels that way sometimes trying to open a throwback pack in 2K. I think there'd be a lot of goodwill in actually saying what the odds are in that case. Even if they're not great odds, you're at least being transparent about it, and people, I think, already realize that it's a low chance of getting the best cards anyway. So I think it's worth doing. The only thing with the card collecting, of course, is that it's very much like buying cards as we used to do back in the day when we would all collect trading cards. And it kind of blows my mind to think, yes, I was kind of gambling all those times then. I was throwing away money, but you do tend to get better cards for a start in the trading card packs to begin with. You just can't put them to a tangible use. That's the benefit of Ultimate Team and my team, of course. But, yeah, don't like to think of it as gambling, but it could certainly be seen that way.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that was, you always take, again, taking that chance and that risk in that sort of sense. I think the transparency element would be great in terms of, you know, what are the odds element. Will it be enough? Probably not in the long run, but it's tough because it can be the possibility of like addictive tendencies and stuff like that. You know, that whole element of Pokemon trying to collect them all, and yeah, just trying to put this thought together properly.
Well, I guess there's a bit of the sunk cost fallacy as well. Like, I've put a bit of money in already, so I've already spent $50. What's another $50 to buy small packs or whatever, or other rewards, that kind of thing. What's another $20 when you've done that? And that's obviously how the recurrent revenue, as 2K calls it, how it's been so successful for them, because people do just keep putting the money in. And that I mean, that's the whole thing with microtransactions, isn't it? A few transactions here and there, oh, it's just $5 here and there, and suddenly you've spent $200 on a $60 game, or $80, whatever it is these days in over here, between, I guess, 70, 75 and 90, whatever you want to say. But you've already spent maybe two or three times the game's value on top of the game itself through microtransactions, and you don't really realize it. It's just added up.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I can actually think to a bank's ad at the moment where they're, you know, trying to basically sell it, well, not sell, but inform of a new sort of feature in that, and, you know, it's guys on the phone ordering takeaway, and they've just basically got, like, the new online statement sort of thing, you know, and it's informative. They've spent, like, $300 in that month on like takeaway food, and then the guy has that moment of realization and is like, well, that's way too much money, so he ends up, you know, coming out with this user wrong number and hangs up on the takeaway order that he's trying to put through, and end up doing like essentially like toasted sandwiches and stuff like that at home. So
that is how microtransactions work, ultimately.
And
it adds up. And if it's combined with this gambling element of you're not even necessarily getting what you want. I mean, we've talked about the evils of microtransactions as far as pay-to-win mechanics with upgrading in your My Player for My Career and 2K Pro-Am and the Playground, of course, or the cost of cosmetic items with VC as well. If there is one thing about that, it is you are getting what you pay for. You know, the value may not be great, but you are at least getting what you pay for. With My Team and Ultimate Team, of course, if you spend money on that as well, you're not... I mean, you know what you're getting. You're getting a pack with a certain amount of odds, whatever those odds may be, but that is a gamble. If there is one thing about pay to win, you are at least getting the result that's promised as far as actually, you know, you will get this much VC that you can spend on this many upgrade points or the price of 15,000 VC tattoo. You know, the price may not be there, but at least it is upfront about what you're spending it on, which is the problem. Now, you did note with NBA Live, they do have the system with the loot crates where you can see what it is, and of course you get the RP, and RP comes through pretty generously, so you can get those, and they are cosmetic items. So is it justifiable if it's a cosmetic item, or is it still gambling? And of course you don't want to invoke the slippery slope fallacy too often, but we've seen how 2K has pushed their luck with that kind of thing. I mean, does it start with a cosmetic item and then does it go to something more substantial?
Well, I think it'll be detrimental to Live if they didn't end up going that route. I'm not sure.
Well, the other thing that...
There was discussion at the event. I'm not sure if I can say it. Again, you know,
I think
making sure that I don't want to break any goodwill, but I did stress something that, you know, I personally hope they don't go that route in that sense.
It's important that they maintain the goodwill, especially
you
know, that is a way that they can continue to rebuild the brand and rebuild trust with gamers. The one thing that they do with the loot crates in NBA Live, apart from the showing the items, is also to display the rarity of the items. They've got them in that tier system, so it does say, well, which ones are you going to unlock first, and that kind of thing. So, you know, it's... I'd still actually like to be able to buy items directly with RP in NBA Live. I'd kind of prefer that to the loot crates. But as long as I just have the loot crates as being cosmetic items, things like that, it's... And it shows you the contents, and it says you can play this many games of to unlock all the items in the crate. It's not as bad, but certainly, I would not be against warnings in video games in general if they do have mechanics that could be considered gambling, because I think you do have to look after the younger gamers and older gamers alike. You know, certainly if you have a compulsive personality or whatever, or addictive personality, it could be a problem.
I think too, maybe some parents, they might not be aware that some game, like if you know they're buying the games for the kids and stuff, they might not be aware that a game might have these kind of mechanics in it. So, you know, if it's displayed on the box and as well as, you know, maybe like a boot up screen warning, like the, you know, the ones back in the day, like Winners Don't Do Drugs sort of ones and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and the piracy ones and all that sort of thing. So. But I guess the question for me in regards to those ones, are they effective? Like, I know a lot of the sort of campaigns in the past, in terms of that kind of stuff, has it actually been effective? Has it actually deterred people? Or,
do people gamble responsibly?
Has it been enough to be a preventative measure and that sort of thing to to addiction and stuff like that?
I mean, I guess it's in a different kind of addiction, but you look at the warnings and the gruesome pictures on packs of cigarettes these days, here in Australia at least. I know this guy, I do have a couple of friends who smoke, and I've seen the packs many times. Like, oh, man, how can you? Just when you look at that's a horrible
thing. The eyeball one.
The eyeball one is pretty gross, and the foot, the gangrene foot, is pretty bad as well. But Is it effective? I guess I don't have the statistics in front of me at the moment or anything, so we can only guess. I think it's the responsible thing to do, I guess, is to put that out there and people are going to do what they're going to do. I mean, if you put that warning out there that these are the odds for the packs, this can be seen as a form of gambling, you know, be responsible with this and these are the odds, etc., etc. And if people still want to spend money after that, that's their prerogative, I suppose. But you've at least given them the information to be well informed, I guess. You've allowed them to make an informed choice. And if they still want to say, well, yes, I have the disposable income to gamble, to take the risk, and I'm happy to do it, and I'm happy to sink money into the game with microtransactions, then that's their choice at the end of the day. But it's kind of the sneakiness, I think, of the whole thing. Yeah. And when it comes to with the odds, I think back to the... Do you remember the My Team pack opening trailer for NBA 2K17 a couple of years ago? They had the community members come in.
Yep.
Had the YouTubers come in, and they had them opening packs, and they're getting all these great pulls, and like, oh, wow, and everything. But and we said on the podcast at the time, are these going to be the odds? Are these going to be the odds that people have? I mean, how much VC did they give them? Did they rig the packs? How many packs did they show them opening? How many did they have to open before they actually got these great pulls? Of course, it's manipulative editing. And did they also manipulate the odds of the packs just for the event? And going back to NBA 2K17's pack odds, I think there's at least some manipulative editing there. If they didn't change the odds of the packs, they gave them a lot of packs to open and only showed them getting the great pulls, because as anyone who's played 2K17's My Team knows, they weren't that good. I mean, you could get some pretty good ones. I opened that box of 20 that time, and I got a few gem cards, which was nice, and built the team up. But it wasn't anything like they were getting in the trailer. And at the time, I said, "Well, this is... I don't want to call it false advertising, but it's certainly very manipulative and not very forthcoming." And stuff like that, on top of not showing the odds in the game, it just lacks goodwill. And I think that 2K is, as much as... Oh, it hasn't really hurt them in sales or anything, so we're yelling into the wind, perhaps. But I think with all the support that gamers have given 2K and made them such a success financially and whatnot, they really could stand to have some more goodwill.
I think 2K do really need to bring out some goodwill right now. I think a lot of consumers right now are going to be concerned, especially after that conference, you know, investors conference call a few months back, you know, with where it's indicating where they're probably really focused more on the microtransaction element or the recurrent revenue, as they're saying now.
Yeah.
And how we will say burnt that consumers were with 2K18. And I really don't think they did enough in regards to adjusting and, you know, pleasing or making amends, essentially. I don't want to say pleasing because then that has that entitled element, but making amends for an aggressive act with regards to the microtransaction.
Sure.
I think the pricing in that for it is ridiculous. And
they didn't change much. They changed their haircuts down to 100 VC, which is kind of negligible.
The daily pickums, they increased the reward. That's it. But they've had...
Was it 50 at launch, was it, instead of 100?
I think it was 25. I think it was 25, and then they put it up to 100.
Right, right. And it's 25 per correct answer in trivia as well.
Yeah, and I think that's still the same.
T-shirts are free. If you've got the sponsorship for My Career, you can get free shoes for your brand, and if you create your own custom shoe, they're automatically free as well.
That element's already been in the game for the last few years, so, you know, with regards to the shoe. But the pricing of the shoes have actually gone up.
Mm.
And
of course, now some of the tattoos and everything else.
But the thing, like, even since that whole, you know, 100 VC apology for the haircuts and all that change. If you look at the All-Star Game content that they've added, the pricing for that, all that stuff, was ridiculous. The fact that, you know, you win a championship, you know, you wear the championship t-shirt or, you know, the conference finals t-shirt, you still actually have to pay for that. But the pricing for the All-Star Game stuff was absolutely ludicrous. It was like
$10,000 for a jersey, something like that.
Oh no, it was $17,500 VC for a jersey.
$17,500. That's wow.
Yeah. Actually, let me just bring up.
That's right. It's $10,000 for the regular if you want to get the regular jersey. Which the idea that even you can't get your own jersey, that doesn't unlock. You only unlock the ability to buy it for $10,000 VC.
Exactly.
I mean, it just goes to highlight the lack of goodwill.
Yeah, and given that this is a quote from, obviously, 2K's community manager, Ronnie TK, in regards to haircuts, coloring, and facial are now 100 VC. We want to make sure it's realistic going forward. And yeah, 17,500 VC for the All-Star Game jerseys. Then we have 15,000 VC for the Team LeBron or Team Steph hats.
Yeah.
Hats. Now, the t-shirt thing is a little bit weird because I have, like I think I stated, like negative 30,536 VC. So, don't know what the hell is going on with that part. I forgot to check the pants, I think.
It's funny because they've gone for this mix of realism and lack of realism in the whole neighborhood concept. You've got the because the in-universe prices are ridiculous, but you've also got that meta pricing with the user and the VC that you're earning. So it's really awkward and inconsistent the way they've done it. And it's... although I will say again, at least with that, it's not gambling. At least you're saying, well, this is a price. It's a ludicrous price, but at least you are getting what you pay for. You can't preview it, which is people say, oh, well, can you preview a haircut before you get it? Or, no, but most haircuts don't cost me $29,000 either. So,
yeah.
You know, 100, one VC is about $29. We worked that out. So 100 VC, you got $2,900 for a haircut. Yeah, you know, I think even a lot of haircuts that are more pricey.
Even Kanye's $800 a day haircuts weren't that pricey.
Yeah, there you go. So even 100 VC by the in-universe value of VC is a bit ridiculous, but it's an expensive neighborhood. What can you say? But if nothing else, you do get you do get what you pay for. But as far as pack odds, things like that, with and any kind of loot crates, I do think it is it would be in their best interests. It would be a show of goodwill to have those odds displayed more prominently. And any warnings on potentially gambling mechanics. We don't want I think it's one of those things where game designers, the developers, are going to have to show some restraint themselves. We don't want I don't think we want governments and governing bodies to stick their nose in too much to the point where it's really ends up damaging the games or making them hard to get or banned for going too far, basically. I think there's going to have to be some self-restraint on the part of the designers as well as before it gets to the point where governing bodies have to step in and make some drastic measures, because then it could get bad. We saw how Mortal Kombat got banned in Australia originally before we had the R18 rating.
A lot of games got banned. You know, they had to really edit a lot of things out and all
Stick
that.
Stick of Truth for South Park, you know, they edited those things out. It's hard to really defend an anal probing scene in a game, but it's the principle of the thing that it's the governing bodies, if they are putting their, I don't know. I can't really go down to South Park. It's hard to defend some of the things they do. It's artistic or whatever, but you know, you just don't want to see the games being shut down or banned because the developers just went too far with gambling mechanics and a lack of goodwill.
Yeah. One other thing, like, could these gambling mechanics, you know, cause the game rating to change because of obviously the age restriction on gambling itself? So
yeah, and things like that, where it ends up being affected by these mechanics and the lack of goodwill. And speaking of goodwill, that kind of leads us into our second topic here, which is about content giveaways. Locker codes, complimentary content, that kind of thing. Basically, a new locker code was released today, or within the past 24 hours or so. from when this is going up. It was a Devin Booker card released to commemorate the 1-year anniversary of his big 70-point game. But like a lot of cards, a lot of locker codes, it was gone in seconds. You know, not even gone in 60 seconds, more like 10 or 15. looking at people on Twitter that try to punch it in. I've gotten to the point where I don't even try anymore because I know by the time I get the game up, it's unless it is a timed release, a timed code, it's going to be gone before I can even get the game open. And even times when I've had the game open and gone straight there and punched it in, again, within 30 seconds of seeing the tweet, with the tweet coming out, I've very rarely had any luck with it. And the funny thing is that Devin Booker himself tweeted it out with the code, the picture of the card and the code, and Ronnie retweeted it about 3 minutes later. By the time that Ronnie retweeted it, it was already gone. So I really think there needs to be more timed locker codes than these limited releases because I just don't know how people get it in that quickly. And if they've got that smaller quantity that it's gone in less than 30 seconds and that most people miss out, it's good luck to the people who got it. Congratulations. But for everyone else, it's kind of a waste. I mean, I wrote a Friday Five about five useless features in basketball games a few weeks back, and I mentioned locker codes, and I got somebody kind of snorted at me on Twitter and said, oh, they've got a use, and said, well, read what I actually wrote, and said, yes, they are potentially useful, but as implemented, and the fact that we get them, and there's such a small quantity, and they're gone before a majority of, you know, not even an eighth of the 8 million people seem to be able to get them, you know, they are kind of useless in that respect. So always read the actual articles, people, and the context, and don't just
skim the headline.
Just skim the headline and just dismiss it, because you know people actually make arguments. You got to reading is your friend. Just throw that out there. But that is the problem with locker codes, that they seem to be a lot better, a lot more goodwill in the early days of locker codes, and now, like I say, I don't even bother because even if I'm online at the time, I know by the time I get the game open or if I do have it open, I don't have a shot because it's gone within 10 seconds. I don't know how people do it, but they do.
Yeah, it's people basically living and breathing the Twitter feeds and stuff like that or other social media if they might post it on there as well. You're just constantly checking every second, I guess, and getting it, really. Or I don't know, maybe people have, I don't want to say inside info, but if hear whispers of, oh, there's a locker code coming, especially if it's one that's dropped out of nowhere.
Sure.
And it's gone that quick, that's pretty crazy. So, I don't know, it is this point, and especially, I think this year has really been the least amount of locker codes I've ever seen them give.
They've kind of, it feels like they've given up on the idea, or at least they're being very stingy with it. And like I say, I think they should be timed because didn't Ron even say that a couple of years ago on 2K TV?
Yeah, that was the thing that the locker time. Yeah, they're improving that element, and so that that it was a little bit more of a fair system. And even when they said that, I think it was for 2K17.
Yeah, and it wasn't.
And it wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah, which means he went on there and lied. Which, I mean, 2K already has a problem with PR and delivering bad news and being open with people. So for him to just go on there and lie. And that was the problem, because that appearance, and of course, as you may have gathered from our tone, we're not the biggest fans of Ronald here. Never have been. Probably never will be. But he went on there and he was making all those silly jokes in between actually dropping info. I mean, that was I hated that for a start. If you're going to drop these nuggets of information in the season finale, maybe tell a couple of jokes at the start, but then just get to the information. But don't just mix it in, because that gives him the out of saying, oh, well, that was just a joke. But it was delivered like it wasn't a joke. I mean, underwater basketball is clearly joking around. It's a stupid joke, but it's joking around. But to say, oh, locker codes are going to be timed instead of limited quantity, that sounds like legitimate information. So yeah. And if they've just gone back on it, at least come out and say, well, we've gone back on it. And that's what gets me about 2K, is that they just change these things and they just don't. There's just times where they're flat out dishonest. And I think any other like community rep or anything who had done some of the things and said some of the things that he's done would be gone by now. But he stays around, which is another rant altogether. But it's just, it's again, it comes back to this lack of goodwill, and they're not putting to use a pretty good system of delivering complimentary content, which I think was a great idea when they introduced it and they were releasing locker codes and we were all getting some. I mean, sure, we were getting useless ones of, you've got 200 MT, happy spending. Like, yeah, middle finger back to you, because 200 MT doesn't get you anything, or 200 VC doesn't get you anything. Gets you two haircuts these days. So there is that. But so, there was the problem with some really crappy rewards. But
well, yeah, didn't John like get like 100 VC or 100 MT or something? When...
He tweeted it out, yeah, with a sarcastic response, yeah. But yeah, it's... That, I mean, that was a problem in and of itself. But you were also getting... Okay, you would get animations for something. I was like, well, I wasn't playing My Career at the time. I didn't like My Career those years, so that was kind of useless to me, or a dunk package or something like that. But you could at least get something. You had an opportunity at a lucky dip to get something, basically. These days, you don't even have that, because it's all limited quantity, and or so it seems, and they're gone in so quickly. So I think there needs to be more time cards, even if they're just available for an hour or two, and maybe have it for an hour or two in different time zones to give everybody a chance for it. Is everybody going to do it? Probably not. Are they going to lose anything by it? I don't think so. Are they making a lot of money as it is? Damn right they are. So, yeah, I think they should be. They could be doing a lot more with the locker codes, as they used to. And the fact that they used to do it a lot better stings, because it's just another case of them, the goodwill just going down and down and down while their profits go up and up and up.
And yeah, it's, well, yeah. Again, that's the same with the VC rewards. You know, things you used to earn in terms of game, and even on the actual phone app, you know, were so much better, and now they're just stingy to the point where it's not even worth
it. It's not worth it. The card game is not fun. The daily picks aren't fun. We can do it in My Career anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that actually, and to be fair, I think both companies could be doing it. I mean, whether it's giving out a complimentary My Team pack every month, because that's something that's happened. Ultimate Team or My Team packs have come out, I forget which year it was, it might have been 14 or 15, that even, not just pre-order customers, but everybody got the, for just logging in, you'd get the My Team or Ultimate Team pack. I forget which one it was, or maybe it was both of them. But they used to do things like that. Or maybe if you hit a certain amount of hours played in the game, you get some bonus VC or RP in live. You know, I think both games could be doing more in that respect, to actually reward players for sinking the hours into the game. Do you remember the EA Sports Bio in the PS2 version of Live 2004?
Not off the top of my head.
Basically, it was a system that rewarded you for obviously buying as many EA games for the whole range. You get bonuses for doing that. But also, the more games you played, the more hours you racked up, the more games you played and won, and other statistical marks that you hit, for example, would increase your level, and the more you leveled up, you'd get points for the NBA store, where you could unlock things in the NBA store in Live 2004, or you'd get unlock, I think some things you could unlock certain jerseys through hitting the levels, things like that. But basically, the EA Sports Bio rewarded you for playing the game and sinking hours into the game. And I think EA could do something similar to that again with Live 19 and beyond. Again, it's just all goodwill that maybe you hit a certain point, a certain amount of hours or whatever, you get a big bunch of RP, or maybe...
Or play like a certain amount of games, maybe like 10 games in a week or something like that.
Like that, yeah. Or you get some skill points, maybe you get 5 skill points so you can do some big boosts. 2K could do something similar, that if you hit a certain goal that you get a bonus amount of VC, you know, even 5 to 10,000 VC, if you get it for playing a whole lot of games in a week, could be a really big bonus to help you upgrade or buy the thing that you want to get because you've been trying to budget your VC. So there's lots of things that you could do. And of course, the thing is, well, if you do that, then how are people going to spend the money on the microtransactions and buy things? But you show that goodwill, and maybe people do, because they say, well, this is a company that cares. I don't mind giving them a few more bucks of my money, because I know that I'm getting some bonuses, and I know I'm being rewarded for playing the game. I'm not just being treated like an ATM. So, you know, I think goodwill goes a long way in business, and I think they will still make that money, even if they do have some rewards. And even if it is a free My Team pack, or everybody gets this, everybody can get this card for My Team if you punch in the locker code, or at least if you do it within the first couple of hours of it being released. It's just things that they could do that, again, make us feel less like we're being taken advantage of and that we're being treated as ATMs as opposed to loyal customers.
Exactly. Which is, you know, disheartening. And, I mean, we, as the whole community part, can actually make a stand for that. Obviously, you know, in not pre-ordering or not purchasing the game or not buying transactions and or spending money on microtransactions and stuff like that. Or so there are ways we can sort of, I suppose, protest or, you know, make a stand for, you know, these unfair practices in a lot of ways. So, yeah. Well, you know, either unfair or could be improved upon practices, we'll say it that way.
I guess the hard part with that is it's easy for any of us to take a stand individually, but a majority won't. So yeah. It's like the whole thing with people with pay-to-win mechanics. People say, oh, well, if you don't want to buy VC, just don't buy VC. Fair enough, but people will, and they're the ones that are going to set the tone competitively online. So to try and catch up, you're kind of forced to either grind hard or think about spending the money to get that immediate boost just so that you can compete with them. Either way, it's not fun. So,
and again, actually, that's something that Agent stressed in a video this past week, I think it was, where he was, I think he was using one of his players, and you know, he was he was actually sort of talking actually about, I think he was, damn it, what was he talking about? If it was the sort of wishlist one and all that stuff, and he did sort of mention, you know, that he's felt like he's had to spend money on the Gatorade and the boost stuff because he knows everyone else is in that sort of sense.
It's forcing people into it because you know the people who are going to try and get that competitive advantage will. So just to try and even the score, you have to try and do it. So yeah, it's all well and good to say, well, don't pre-order, don't buy VC, don't do this, but certainly there are elements of the game or the attitude from other gamers are going to force you to at least consider it, strongly consider it, if you want to be on an even playing field. So that is the problem there. It's all well and good to say, well, I'm going to take a stand. Feasibly, though, easier said than done, unfortunately.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, sort of just thinking and sort of the way that all sounded was, like, drug cheating in sports and all that sort of sense, you know, this person, you know, especially take for example with cycling, how notorious it's been in, especially in like Tour de France and stuff like that, how many people you hear about getting banned and stuff like that.
Steroids in baseball, everyone was kind of doing it for a while there, or certainly many of the big names.
So, you know, it has that kind of indicate or sense about it that, you know, that's what it's coming down to doing in that sort of sense. Instead of it being on your own ability to play the game, you're using enhancements in that sort of sense to try and gain that competitive edge.
Yeah, and I suppose it comes down to what we say. We want to see that stuff cleaned up. We want to see an even playing field as much as it can be. We want to see it come down to skill rather than who's just willing to drop the money on it. And more goodwill, which again goes back to odds on packs and any warnings about gambling and certainly complimentary content. I think that both companies can go a long way in just rewarding players for putting that many hours into the game. And I think it's a nice bonus and makes you feel good about the product. It makes you feel good about the time you've spent and encourages you to spend even more time. So I think everyone wins in the end. And I don't think it's going to cut into their profits that much. I think the goodwill is going to win out in the end.
Yeah, I agree, so, as well.
So with that being said, that's pretty much it for our debate of the week, or our discussion of the week, I should say. Pretty much on the same side with that one, I think. I think many gamers are on our side with that one. So it is time to talk about our week in basketball gaming.
Oh, that's a devastating dunk in his face. Oh, he just stole his heart with that dunk right there.
we'll start off, as we often do, with a recap of our weekly 2K Pro-Am session. Another one where we went 3-2. That seems to be a theme with us when we play the five games at the moment, Ben, going 3-2. So at least we're getting the winning record on the night. But we really could have gone 5-0. Those two losses stung. They were winnable games, sadly.
Yeah, I agree. Especially that second one we lost. I think that one would have been... It was more definite that we should have won.
We were leading in that one as well, which was...
And they had a horrible record, didn't they?
Yeah, we lost to someone with a really bad record. We're not tearing it up with a great winning record ourselves, but they were considerably worse than us. And yeah, that they we could have and should have won that game. It was just a really rough one. After a couple of weeks of actually shooting the ball really well from three, I was a bit off. It was actually me though. I was getting some really bad. I was not timing my release as well. But on the bright side, I was dunking out of nowhere. So that started to happen. Starting to think it might be these new signature shoes I've got for my player, because they and X brought up the idea, the point that a lot of shoes have had bonuses and hidden boosts historically. I don't think that the signature shoe does it at all, but it was just funny that all of a sudden maybe they pushed through a tuning update or something very quietly. But yeah, I think I dunked more on Friday night than I have in all of our sessions combined previously, because I was getting at least one dunk per game and several dunks in a few of them, which, again, for the sharpshooting playmaker archetype, I felt I've not been able to. I've been laying it up when I want to dunk, and it's getting to the point where if I'm within the vicinity of somebody, I can't. But I even took it to the rack. It just drove through traffic and threw it down, and that really surprised me that I wanted to do it, but I didn't think I was going to be able to. That was just up on the stick, so maybe I just need to try that more often. I brought back the reverse, the baseline reverse, the return of that. That was good. But that was a game, unfortunately. That dunk did give us the lead, and that was one that we ended up losing, which was a rough one. They just had that little burst at the end, and we were not playing well in the crunch time, which unfortunately has been a recurring issue with some of our pro-am games this year, where we've just thrown it away in the fourth. We haven't had that clutch gene, even though we've all got the clutch badge, I think, at this point. when do you get that? That's high 80s, isn't it?
Yeah, from memory, I think, or even in the 90s, I think. I can't remember now. Because that's when one of the sort of like when you get Alpha Dog and all that stuff, isn't it?
It is one of the ones, yeah.
Between 85 to the 90 mark,
so
I imagine.
85, yeah. So we should all have it at the moment. We're all over the 85 mark, and you and I in the 90s. So we should actually be able to have those clutch performances. Sadly, we have not had that on the sticks. But it was nice to dunk again. You know, if I'm not hitting the threes, at least I could go inside and surprise us with some dunks. It always kind of pumps us up when I get it, because it's been so unexpected this year. And it was really fun to throw down that reverse. I'm glad I re-equipped that package again so that I could pull that out. I thought it was going to be reverse layup, so I was very pleasantly surprised by that. So we went 3-2. We lost that game to that team with a terrible record. That really did sting. But X was pretty, you know, X was pretty good from three. I was having a really rough one, but I think he was, what, 7 of 9 or 8 of 10 or something in one of the games?
I think it was like 7 of 8 from one game.
Because I know I had a 6 of 7 game myself a few weeks back, and that felt good. But yeah, X really had his eye in, and even without the lag, he was shooting well last week with lag. He was shooting even better this week without it. So, you know, not surprising there. But he adjusted to the lag this week, last week, and this week he didn't have to. So we had it was a decent run again, but it felt a lot more frustration this week, certainly from my part. I found myself either throwing those passes out of bounds or getting picked off by the AI a bit more often. And there was that one where I just got forced out of bounds and got the turnover. But
yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that some of it wasn't on our decision-making, because you've always got to... you can't just... it's a poor workman who blames his tools, I guess, is what you... But certainly there were some things with the game, with the tuning and whatnot, that we did get screwed over by, and that didn't... It didn't help, because that always takes you mentally out of the game.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially when, you know, it starts to occur a lot. And, you know, on the simplest thing, it was almost like that inbound play that the Nuggets did with Torrey Craig and was it Harris or something? Or Beasley? Sorry,
yeah.
Where they just. But you know, it was a glitch moment in the actual game, not in ourselves. Like in most cases, in this, it was like, yeah, it's just frustrating when you know it's not a mistake from your own hand, like from your own doing, when the mistake feels forced upon.
Yeah,
in that sense, and I mean,
they're stuck in the animations, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I had that animation. Well, there was like an inbound play from the baseline, and my player, like, I could not move him at all. Like, he was just sort of like standing there, but he was kind of like in an action of like wiping his feet or something like that, but I could not move him.
Mm.
And for about 2 or 3 seconds from the inbound, I was stuck in doing absolutely nothing. So I was useless and detrimental to the team getting scored upon in that sort of sense. And it was frustrating because it was like, what the hell is going on? Why couldn't I move? And it was just so random.
And we saw the overpowered nature of the pure sharpshooter that I was up against, where he just hit three after three, even when I was in his face.
Yeah.
And I know they've tuned down the hands up defense. If you don't jump to block, you it doesn't contest as heavily as previous years, which is good in a way, but they haven't really adjusted it in a good sense that it the offensive player now has too much of an advantage, especially if you are a shooting archetype. And the other thing is, if you jump to block quite often, you'll jump in and get the foul.
Yeah.
So you get a canned foul moment. So you either take the foul in the 4-point play. Well, that happened to Leo. Got the 4-point play against him. That fired up Leo, and Leo just took over then, which is that was fun.
And he actually didn't control the player and jump. The game decided for him, didn't he?
Yeah, it sucked him into the animation. So you got to be careful about that. But if you're not careful about that, you don't contest strongly enough. So that's something, again, it all comes down to tuning and balance for 2K19. But apart from that, certainly have to admit there were some problems with spacing, some forced shots and defensive breakdowns that were on us. And teams were running some pretty good screens on us. And with the sharpshooters, they were running some good screens. And when that happens, I was getting caught on some. So I did give up a few too many threes, especially with that pure sharpshooter. So, I mean, there were definitely problems we had, but we could have gone at least 4-1, possibly even 5-0 on the night. So the two losses were pretty frustrating in that respect, that knowing that we could have won them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the whole night was a little bit weird, like, in terms of... I was only able to get one double-double. Were you able to get a double-double?
I got one, and I almost got two, but I didn't make that three at the end of the...
Yeah, that's right.
The fifth game, I came close, but I only had the one. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I didn't rebound as well. Aside from the two games, like one where I got the double double, and then there was one game where I think I had like 8 rebounds. I think that was the first game where I had the 8 rebounds, and it was kind of really quiet, which was unusual in that sense. You know, especially given that the other week when I had like 16 and 18 rebounds in back-to-back games. So it was kind of like a little bit weird. And I admit, like, I actually tried seeing if the boost would do anything. So I bought like a 10-pack of all the boosts you can get just to sort of see.
Yep.
It was because, again, just sort of listening to Agent's video, I was like, all right, well, let's see if it does anything. Plus I had, you know, like 50,000 VC to burn. It was like, all right, let's sort of see if doing this does anything in terms of it. So I did that. I bought the Gatorade boost again, just to sort of max out everything that I could do to try and help and you know, try and be effective, try and, you know, perform better in the game and that. And yeah, I mean, it kind of felt wasted in terms of the ability to rebound in that sort of sense. I didn't feel like the boost really did anything. I felt like I've rebounded better without it. So that was, yeah, probably a bit of a waste of virtual currency in that sort of sense, or virtual money.
Yeah, I tried the boost a few weeks back as well. I didn't really notice much of a difference, to be honest. The whole idea is that it makes the boost go down slower and recover quicker, mostly for the turbo boost that you get from going to the gym.
Yeah.
And it didn't really seem to have a tangible effect on the games that I played with it, so I haven't bothered since. But yeah, it's hard to say. Some people swear by it. Whether it's a placebo effect, I don't know. But it did, at least for us, it didn't seem to make much of a difference, at least in this week's session.
Yeah. Just trying to think what else is sort of in regards to... But yeah, it didn't feel like our traditional sessions in terms of a lot of things.
It was a bit rough, and I mean, even there was a start where Leo got off to a 1-8 start, which is very rare for him. I wasn't making threes after the first couple of weeks with this. I still like the animation that I've got. It's working out quite well usually. I just didn't have a great night shooting the ball. I was releasing too early or too late. I was messing up my timing on the button and the sticks, so I will take responsibility for that. But then dunking sometimes, and X missing those free throws with 80+%, 88%.
Yeah, both were 88 and good releases.
Missing like that and not getting the rebounds and everything. It definitely was a bit of a weird session in that respect, but at least we got the winning record, 3-2 on the night, and we managed to end on a win, so that was nice.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing that I've been doing this week is, of course, my career, and I managed to get to, with the 2K Prime session, I managed to get to the cap breaker, so I was able to get the next couple of things unlocked, which included the next up on a dunk and block, dunking and blocking. You know, they're my key skills, obviously. So we'll see if I can dunk a bit more often. In fact, I had another dunk in traffic in my career game. But I've got to that point. It's going to have to be grinded up again, I guess, to get to the 91 now. And I'm right back at the bottom of the cap breaker. So it's a long way to go after all that grinding. But it is what it is. That's the way they're doing the road to 99. But the other thing, of course, is I unlocked the shoes. I did that last week, the shoe creation, the signature shoe. And I actually got your help to actually design it. And so I went through the whole customization of that, and it turned out I think we made some pretty good shoes with the Vegs ones, so basically, as opposed to the ground Vegs, which is just a recolor of the Air Jordans. But so we made the custom ones. I think one of the big things with the shoe creator that really throws you is that as you're adding the layers, it doesn't necessarily add them in a good order. Like, it presents you with the next layer that you add isn't necessarily a good one, because it all depends on where you position the layers, and it doesn't really give you them in the right order.
Yeah, you know, it basically, once you select, you know, new layer, it will just basically go to the bottom, which will essentially be the top. And then so you have to position it where you want it to go. And of course, with the logo layer, especially, I think it's still in the case of this game, in this year's game. I know it was in last year's, where the logo layer always had to be the last layer.
Yeah.
And so the one on the top in that sort of sense.
But it's one of the first ones that it gives you, which means it ends up as one of the lower layers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's confusing for me, because I was just using that as a guide, like, oh, they must be picking out the parts in the right order, but they don't really pick out the layers and the parts in the right order. So we came up with some decent shoes. The red and black version actually looks very much like the Jordan ISO 2s that I have. So that was kind of had them in mind, I guess, so that was kind of cool. And I made the blue and white versions for Pro-Am, so I've got my black and red ones for NBA games, and I've got the blue themed ones for Pro-Am that fits the team. So yeah, it's really the first time I've actually messed around with a shoe creator in 2K, so that was very new to me.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent a little bit of time, obviously, in it, especially the last probably 3 or 4 years on it, trying to create a few things. I really hope for next year that they have different options in terms of things you can select into shapes and things like that, because it has actually been the same. So, you know, you've kind of run out of the sort of new designs that you could really create in that sort of sense. And in a lot of cases, too, the layers don't really blend well or mix well together. Like, they're just sort of, you can't really put something cohesive together, because they don't really gel well in that sort of thing, in
No,
making it
it
so.
doesn't line up. None of the parts really line up that well,
Yeah.
and especially since they do give them, since they do give you the layers when you create the new layer and it automatically selects a part,
Yeah.
it because it does select one that may not necessarily be in the right order, it looks even worse trying to get it to fit in with each other. Like the, I think it was the, what was it? Was it the gave me the midsole before
The overlay.
before the overlay, yeah. So you got to move it up and down to make sure the layers are in the right order so that it looks right. So again, it's just, if you're a novice with it and you're looking for guidance as far as what layer looks best. I mean, it does say right there that you can hold and drag the layers up and down, which is nice that you don't have to delete and recreate them. But again, if you're relying on it as a guide of, okay, this is the next layer of what to do, yeah, you can end up not with the results that you really want, basically.
Yeah, I think, again, this is where it sort of needs a bit of reworking and that sort of thing. I know a few areas in which I'd like to sort of see it go and all that stuff, and where it could possibly be going to in terms of future and all that sort of thing. And similar thing with the like T-shirt creator as well. And I think both could use a reworking or to create something a little bit more functional. Even the jersey creator too. I think the jersey creator thing is pretty crap as well. So, I think all those three systems there in terms of the creation tool element just really need a good reworking.
So again, something for 2K19, if they're gonna let us do this stuff, much better to have these deeper creation tools. But I mean, I'm fairly happy with the way the shoes turned out, and they seem to be helping me to dunk more often. I can't think of any other reason, because I only just upgraded the dunk rating after Friday night after we'd finished playing. So
Yeah.
who knows? Maybe it is the shoes, as they so often say. But yeah, it's just weird that I do seem to be dunking a little bit easier now. Maybe they have pushed through another tuning update that's finally fixed the problem.
Hopefully it is something that's in that case. I mean, I guess we'll potentially know more over the coming weeks if we play a bit more and all that stuff.
For sure. The other thing that I've been playing is quite a bit of Ultimate Team this week. Certainly quite a few games of that, because I've put together my 90s All-Stars squad, basically. This week's legends are the Utah Jazz legends, and I needed a power forward. So I said, okay, you know what? I'm not the biggest fan of Karl Malone, but I do want to, I want to get a better power forward, a retro power forward. So I did spend a bit more money because I was low on coins and points. So I did a little bit of more money. I don't mind supporting live after all it's been through, and I am really enjoying Ultimate Team. And I also got the game as a pre-order bonus, as an early birthday present. So I've got some money that I didn't have to spend on the game originally. So anyway, I did spend money on the packs. I got the packs. I got Stockton and Malone, which is the players I wanted. With all due respect to Pistol Pete Maravich, I wanted the 90s players, and I got them. So currently running with a 90s All-Stars starting five of Stockton, Drexler, Pippen, Malone, and Olajuwon.
That's a pretty tough lineup right
It's a
there.
pretty good lineup. I mean, obviously, I would prefer MJ as the shooting guard, but
Yeah.
he's not in the game, so that's neither here nor there. But it is actually a really fun lineup to play with. I've been having some fun since I put it together. It's quite balanced, actually, because even though they're not necessarily, it's not the same kind of 3-point shooting as having Stephen Curry in the lineup, because I've got the All-Star Stephen Curry card from the All-Star content back in February. But Drexler and Pippen are actually pretty solid for 3-point shooting. And Stockton, obviously, pretty good as well. So it's a pretty fun lineup to work with, and there's a lot of inside scoring. Since they've definitely fixed Scottie Pippen's dunk package at last, so he's dunking all over people, just like Drexler. So again, that's a lot of fun. And Malone and Olajuwon also score inside pretty easily. But I was all ready to say, okay, now I've got my starting five. Now I'm gonna have to just grind for coins to see if I can get some other legends. And shout out to Turnloke21, EA Game Changer, contacted me on Twitter when I talked about it on my Twitter, and actually offered to donate some coins to me. So I put up a card, and he gave me about 200,000 in coins for the through the auction house. And
nice.
Through that, I was able to get Mutombo, of course, John Starks, Gary Payton, the Cavaliers version of Sean Kemp. I would have liked the Sonics Kemp, but the Caps Kemp is still pretty good and still late 90s, obviously. And Chris Mullen. So I've got a pretty strong 90s squad running at the moment. I've also got Kukoc coming off the bench at the moment, but I'm currently looking at getting Rodman and Penny. I just need to grind up a few more coins again and get them in the auction house. I had a winning bid on Rodman the other day, and somebody came in and sniped it in the final seconds, and I wasn't quick enough to put in a bid. And I had enough coins to actually outbid them, but yeah, they sniped it at the very last second. It's like an eBay auction almost. With
I was about to say that.
So I'm still trying to get a Rodman, and I'm looking at a Penny Hardaway would be great. And I was looking at getting a Cavs Shaq, because that's still a pretty good card. And of course, Shaq is a 90s player, and there's also a Heat Shaq on there as well, but neither of them are obviously the 90s version of Shaquille O'Neal. So, but most of the Magic Shaqs are going for about 200,000 coins, and I didn't want to spend all the coins on one player. So I said, okay, I'd rather see if I can get a full thing. So I'll see what I might end up, much the same way that I compromise on getting the Cavs Kemp instead of the Sonics Kemp. I might compromise and get a cheaper Shaq like that, just to have the names from the 90s, basically. But that's I feel that's a pretty strong 90s squad. I'm going to have to rewrite my Monday tip-off, because it was all about how I was going to try and build the bench, and now I have, so I'm going to have to rewrite my Monday tip-off that I wrote about getting this, because it's just a really fun squad to play with, especially now having Peyton and Kemp. I showed you the video, I think. The lob from the glove to the Rain Man was cool to do. And Cavs Kemp has still got a pretty good finishing and dunking rating, so he's able to throw down that reverse. That was really, I think, it really looked like a Gary Payton to Sean Kemp alley-oop play, that one, with the pick and roll and the reverse dunk. Yeah. So I was really happy with the way that turned out. But I would like to get the Bulls Rodman, who's 92 overall, and the Penny Hardaway as well. There's some Tim Hardaways in there that aren't too bad, but Penny Hardaway can dunk now, so that's a bit better than Tim Hardaway. I do have the Kukoc, so I've got 11 of the 12 players in the squad are actually 90s players at the moment. I've got Yao Ming on there, just as the other legend. I've just got a full retro squad at the moment. But yeah, I've pretty much close to building the 90s squad, and it is a lot of fun to play with.
That's really cool.
And it's been fun to just get back into that mode this year. And again, part of that is because the dynasty, or rather I should say franchise, is not where it needs to be, and I've kind of been dragging my feet on starting a My League or anything like that in 2K. But in the meantime, yeah, Ultimate Team has been fun. So that's probably what I'm going to be playing for live for the rest of the year, I'd say. I just have to hit up all the Master Challenges to try and get some of those cards. But now that I've got the stacked 90s squad, I might actually have a bit of luck going against those ones. But I've been doing the weekly challenges, the featured content that comes through, and the weekly rookie ladder challenges and the retro challenges and everything. I've been doing that, so just a matter of building up my coins to fill out the last bench of the 90s All-Stars, basically.
Nice work. My week in Masterball Gaming hasn't been a big one. Just been flat out working this week, so it wasn't really until Friday when I actually got a bit of gaming in, because I felt like, okay, well, I've worked hard, I'll have a bit of fun this week. And I was basically played one game of my career in terms of basketball gaming, and then obviously the program that we did. I'm trying to still get to a 92 in that sort of sense. So I want to be sure that I stay ahead of you in terms of that. Keeping the highest rating in the team at this point, and that time. I still have a feeling that I'm probably going to have to go one more cap breaker, and I'm like, oh. Huh. So it's kind of like, yeah.
Well, seeing how I wanted to play that fifth game on Friday night just to get there, and I ended up after that game 99.8%. It was just grinding away in the gym, doing drill after drill in the gym, just to exercise after exercise, I suppose, in the gym, just to get that final 0.2%. So Yeah, over 90, it is a grind. The Cap Breaker is an absolute grind. So,
yeah.
Year one now, people have already got to 99 and 98 and the high 90s already, because that's just, I guess it is just playing the game every single day, and 2,000 games in the park and a few hundred more in my career and whatever else. And I just don't know how people do it.
Yeah, I know. Like, the my career game that I played, for my Cap Breaker, I got like a 1.3% increase and all that stuff. So it's like, yeah, playing 10-minute quarters, getting like, I think it was like 64 points and 12 and 13 or something. I can't remember what my assist and rebound record or tally was, but it was a really decent triple-double, and you know, you had some steals and blocks and that, and still only getting a 1.3% increase. It's like, yeah, it's a long way to go in that sort of thing. So I am over that 50% mark, though, from memory of the Cap Breaker. So, you know, just another, let's see, 1.3 divided by, we'll say 1.5, because the drills you might do sort of in between. So what's 50 divided into 1.5 be, you know, potentially like, say, approximately 20-something games.
It's 33.
33, yeah. Well, that's a lot of games. That's basically almost half a season there,
yeah,
it feels like.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's... Yeah, I'm surprised, actually, that I've got almost as high as you with that.
Yeah,
because you've played into the second season, and whereas I'm still halfway through, literally just sort of hitting the halfway point of my first season, so...
Yeah, it's kind of scary how much for how far ahead technically I am, that I'm so little ahead in the...
I mean, you are a point ahead. I haven't hit 91 yet, so you are still a point ahead. Do you do all the drills all the time, or get good scores on all the drills? Or
Yeah. I'm trying to, you know, get the gold acrobat badge and all that stuff. So, you know, that's doing, you know, that acrobat badge, like, all the, you know, thing to do that four times. And, you know, I wouldn't have, given how many of my badges that I've had, you know, I've got like only 20 maxed out or something like that. You know, I've been putting in work in this game.
That's a lot of XP. Yeah, it is strange that I'm that close. I think I may have only a couple more games of Pro-Am than you this year.
It's one more game.
One game difference. Okay. Yeah, then I can't. I suppose maybe I know I get a lot of XP from assists, and because I've had a lot of 18 to 25 assist games in my career, I suppose maybe that's helped get it a little bit quicker. But
I'm averaging more than 12 assists a game. I'm only averaging 13 assists a game.
Right.
I am getting about 16 rebounds a game. And I'm averaging about 55 points a game in the second season.
Hmm.
So, and I do get steals and blocks as well. So
yeah, I can't explain it then.
it's you know, and yeah, the fact that too, you know, I've also got like the Hall of Fame badge and yeah, like I said, how many maxed out badges at this point? I've only got them all maxed out, so. That all the ones that I can, so yeah, it's kind of a bit concerning how much work you actually do have to put into this game in that sort of sense. I mean, I know I haven't been playing as much since December, but still, it's
you have played more My Career games overall, is the point.
Yeah, exactly.
You're in the second season, plus similar amount of My Career games, similar amount of park games, playground games.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've actually played more park games.
You've played a few more park games than I have, so yeah, that's very hard to explain then.
And yeah, probably even more walk-on games as well.
I haven't really played walk-on for months now. Yeah,
I mean, I haven't either, but I think I think in the earlier days I did play a few more. So again, you know,
I think I've only played about five, to be honest. So it's mostly been squad games. So.
Yeah, I gotta see how many I've played, but I know there's been a few. So yeah, for all that amount of grinding that I've been doing, the progression of it doesn't seem as rewarding in that sort of sense, and it's not like I haven't been trying. So, and you know,
well,
yeah, I mean,
it's kind of comes back to what we've been saying, that it is, you've got to grind a lot to have fun, and even when it comes to the accomplishments, just so much of it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's pretty crazy in that sort of sense. I think that is a disheartening factor in terms of things. It's like, how much more do I need to continue on in terms of playing on to progress in that sort of sense? And yeah,
I mean, I don't see. I had the idea of maybe I'd put in a good effort and try to get to 99 overall this year, but realistically, I'm just happy I got to 90 at this point. I mean, it'd be nice to get to 92, because then you can, then you don't have to go to the gym all the time. You get the boost, and the state can keep that boost, and you get the ball machine and get a few other perks at that level as well. You get the skateboard, which would be, you know, just fun to have as an alternative to running or the bike or the subway. But I don't think I'd probably, if I got to 92, I'd say, well, that's about it. You know, if I don't get any higher, I'm happy enough with that, because it's just, I mean, obviously, once you hit that level, you're good enough to have an impact in online and my career.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like you need to be a 99 overall. It's more for bragging rights and a goal to set yourself. But yeah, I don't see myself getting that far. I had visions of trying, but if I was enjoying the game as much as last year, and really to the point where I'd be playing it multiple times a week instead of just having a couple of sessions here and there, and also if live wasn't there as well, that I wasn't splitting my time between the two, then I might have a better shot. But at the moment, I don't feel inclined to get on every day and play. You know, I just feel like having a couple of sessions per week.
Yeah, and that's the same for me. I think I enjoyed the game more last year.
Definitely, yeah.
And I think I would definitely be, you know, if it was sort of the grading system for today, well, for this year's game as it was for last year's game, I think I'd be closer to a 95 mark, to be honest. I think that's...
We both hit 95 last year. I think we all hit 95 at one point.
I'm talking in terms of, like, if it was the same point in this time. But,
absolutely.
In that sort of comparison, I think I'd be closer to a 95, maybe a 94, given the amount of work, but I think I'd be a lot further, especially given that I've not really played a lot since December.
Yeah. Well, you've already played through the one season, so that's kind of gets a bit repetitive after that. It's almost, you want to get online, so it's different in the social aspect, so it's...
Yeah. But... Yeah, it was interesting. Like in that micro game that I did play, I did attempt a few more threes than regular. Like normally I might try one or two, or you know, if it's still, you know, buzz beater shot. And I actually had a cutscene, which was surprising, and it was regarding, you know, to the stats guy. You know, the assistant coach tells me,
to shoot more threes,
And it's like, it's not really my archetype sense. Yeah.
I got that one very early, because obviously it is, and I do take the threes, but yeah, it's...
So yeah, that was an interesting throwback. You know, interesting, because I hadn't really had cutscenes in second season.
Yeah.
So I think I've rarely had one or two locker game ones and that. Like, you know, post, you know, when you and, what's his name, Shemmy Wells and that go into locker, so... After the game, you know, you're sort of talking and boo-boo and all that sort of stuff. So there's really been that. I haven't had really any press ones, like when you go to the conference, post-game conference and all that stuff, press conference. And I'm glad, though, I haven't had a boo-fresh experience since I finished the first season. So
I do envy that. It's worth getting through the first season, I think, just to get past all of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's... I mean,
be fresh as be gone.
Be gone, be stale. It's you look at, because they're unskippable cutscenes, just how much time they add to the experience. It's an extra minute here and there. Again, it kind of all adds up. And you look at, to get
some scenes are a couple of minutes as well, so like nearly the 5 minute mark or so. So again, you know, if you haven't got much time,
it's, you're going to sit through it. You can't skip it. With even just the cutscenes of walking into the locker room and walking out to the court, even if there's no other additional cutscenes with Shammy or Boo Boo,
yeah,
or anything else like that, or B-Fresh, or any of the cutscenes, it's just all about 15 to 20 seconds here and there that just, again, adds up that you can't get straight to the gameplay, and then you've got to skip through National Anthem or pregame stuff with DA and everything. Yeah. So I also timed, because I threw a video, just wanted to see how long it was. But if you go and get that fourth drill for training, if you go to Fresh Squeezed and get the juice to get the extra training drill, it takes about, including loading time, about 2 minutes to exit the practice gym, run over, get a little cutscene, and some of those cutscenes are longer than others, and then run back. It took about 2 minutes and 10 seconds. So again, that with including loading time in and out of the gym. So that's the problem, that it's just so much extra stuff, extra time just doing stuff that's inane, repetitive, or sitting through a cutscene, or like the
loading screens,
the playground got next, waiting there for a game. There's just so much waiting around these days that you really want that streamlined experience, you can't get it. And it's, I mean, again, I suppose it goes to show we're getting older, other responsibilities, less patience maybe, but I think I've seen even younger gamers say that it's not their thing. They don't necessarily like the neighborhood and all the running around and everything. They just want to get straight to playing the game, because that's the fun part. It's not the repetitive stuff and having the coach having the cutscene, a little cutscene where you walk over to the coach and, all right, DJ, this is what we're working on, you know, instead of being able to go straight into the drill like last year.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes
it all adds up.
Sometimes the Mike Way or the Scotty Gallagher, you know, their little characters and that, they won't actually turn around for a little bit.
Oh, that's even worse. Yeah.
Yeah, when you're like waiting like 10, 20 seconds and they still haven't turned around, and it's like, come on now.
Yeah, and little things like that, it just really pads out the experience. And it may sound like we're bitching, and hey, I have had fun with Live 18 and 2K18. You know, I know there are things to criticize in both games, and we've probably sounded more critical about 2K18 because it's done all this extra stuff with the neighborhood and everything. But the novelty wears off so quickly, and there's just so much waiting around.
Yeah, and it's unnecessary loading screen times. There's unnecessary unskippable scenes. There's unnecessary a lot of things, and having to travel from, and then, or if you want to go change something, you have to go back and out of one venue into another venue, and then it's stupid. And then even collecting your VC, you have to go and, instead of it, why can't it be wireless transfer? How
there's no direct deposit in the neighborhood. Yeah, no.
Yeah. How inept is this system? You know, in terms of it, it's there's just a lot of
it's just crap. You don't need a lot of messing around. Yeah.
This is when 2K17 is also, it feels like such a better game, because it was a lot more accessible with the menus, just to go, all right, I need to do this, and it'll only take this much time, like 30 seconds to a minute, you know, whereas 2K18, it's like, well, this may take like 5 minutes. You know, it's ridiculous.
The only thing that's sped up, I think, about the neighborhood is getting to the park playground, because that is within the neighborhood. Loading that you don't, it's the only thing that you can go to in the neighborhood that doesn't really require loading, except the subway, which is still pretty quick compared to.
Oh, yeah, that was the only bad thing. Like, yeah, 2K17 loading into my park
was just incredibly slow sometimes, where we thought it would have frozen. But for Pro-Am, for example, you get loaded there into the little cul-de-sac, I guess, at the end of near the practice facility. You've got to run all the way up to the Pro-Am arena, and then there's a loading screen. So it's extra time, whereas last year it's like you just bring up the menu, go to Pro-Am. And that is the problem with not having the menus like that.
Yeah.
With trying to have this living world experience, it's just, I don't want to say it's a failure, because I'm sure a lot of people do like it, and maybe it's younger people, maybe people who just don't find it as inane and repetitive as we do, but I find it inane and repetitive, basically. I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, I'm the same. It's just so much unnecessariness to it.
I actually want to go back to 2K17 and play a bit of my career and just see if I enjoy it a bit more. Just to see just before the server shuts down, I'd also like to see if we can get an online game or go to the park or something at least and just see if we can get a game, that'd be interesting to do. See how many people are still playing it at this point of the year. See if people have gone back to it.
Yeah, especially after, you know, the whole 2K League audition.
Yeah, I mean, we've been saying we want to give it a try, so I think we'll have to see if we can tee up a session just to see if we can get a game, or just to see. But even that, I'd like to play some My Career before the server goes down, because that'll be later this year, I would imagine, 27 months past.
Yeah, yeah.
End of this year. But until then, I guess it's Live 18 and 2K18 here and there, and eventually later this year, hopefully even better experiences in Live 19 and 2K19.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely more optimistic about Live at the point in terms of, you know, things that they're working on. Given some of the directional changes or the direction that 2K is doing, you know, a little bit sceptical and
it's a bit concerning. Concerning some of the reason and how successful they've been with the recurrent revenue is that they don't really have a incentive to change it, the approach. So kind of got fingers crossed there and hope that that the developers can still work around that and still not have it as be as intrusive. Microtransactions aren't going anywhere, but as long as they're not as intrusive, it's not as bad, you know.
Yeah.
It's when they really get in the way of the, when they really dictate the experience that has become a problem, which has been the problem in 2K18. It's not because people say, oh, VC has been there since 2K13. And it has, but it's never been this intrusive to the
And it's
the
never experience. Been as nerfed.
No.
Like, given how much you can earn, and especially when they took away the difficulty multiplier.
Yeah.
That was an issue, how little you get now. Like, what, a 3 point, instead of getting 9 VC, you get, is it 3 or 2?
You get 3.
3. So,
and it's gone from 9 to 6 to 3 over the past few years, and no difficulty multiplier. So again, the people that are saying get rid of VC, not realistic, but certainly implemented in a way that's fair, is what we've been saying pretty much all year. And the more we play, it doesn't get that much better with regards to that. So, well, we've said it all before. We're hoping for the best, and in the meantime, we're making the best of the situation.
Hoping for the best, but expecting the worst, to be honest.
Yeah, hopefully we're wrong about that. But in the meantime, still getting on for our sessions and having a bit of fun every now and again. And hey, if I can dunk a little bit more often, I'll at least enjoy doing that instead of having to open court layups, Andre Miller in the 2000 rookie game. The crowd just booing him for that. So before we wrap up the NLC podcast, episode number 242, thought we'd touch a little bit on some recent topics with the NBA. Injuries have been striking down players at the moment. Ben, Kyrie Irving is out 3 to 6 weeks after knee surgery.
Yeah.
Stephen Curry has injured his MCL again, and they haven't really given much of a... They're going to evaluate, I believe, in 3 weeks.
Yeah,
or so,
yeah.
But yeah, obviously two prominent point guards for teams that have made the finals in recent years. Irving is now with the Celtics, of course. Not good news there either.
No, and you know, given that Durant's injury is potentially a bit more serious than originally thought, so all those ribbings and stuff took a bit of a toll by the looks of it. It's been very injury prone year in terms of things for a lot of the players and that. So yeah, I mean, it kind of makes the playoffs more interesting in terms of you know, how all these injuries will have an effect on some of these things, especially like in case of the Warriors. You know, they're expected to be favorites and all that stuff, and this now adds an extra dynamic and I guess a difficulty multiplier for their odds to win the championship and stuff. So
yeah, they're quite banged up, the Warriors at the moment. Klay Thompson with the broken hand, although he's shooting around left-handed and not looking too bad left-handed than a lot of people are shooting with their dominant hand, of course, being the shooter that he is. Even Durant's had the injury problems. Big blow to the Celtics, obviously, when Hayward, of course, went out in the opening night. But like, he may be back by the playoffs. There's still some encouraging signs there with him walking around without the boot. But one of the interesting situations injury-wise in the NBA at the moment is Kawhi Leonard with the Spurs, of course. He's only played 9 games, I believe, this year, and there was talk about him missing the season, then there was the rest of the season, then there was talk about him coming back, and there was a date a couple of weeks ago that was targeted as his return date, and now he's said that he's not ready, that the injury is still lingering, and they actually held a players-only meeting the other week. His teammates kind of confronting him about it, and it was apparently very tense, and there's also been denials of that, but then there's been other players that have indicated, no, the denials are just trying to downplay the rift, and it really does seem there's some dysfunction there, which is really surprising for the Spurs franchise. Like, they usually do not have dysfunction. Kings, Bulls, Knicks, you know, dysfunction is their middle name. the Chicago Dysfunctional Bulls. It's, you know, you expect that kind of the way the organization has had all these issues over the years, those organizations, the Bulls, Knicks, and Kings, you expect it, but the Spurs have been this first-class organization and great leadership and everything like that, yet there seems to be this rift there that maybe Leonard is not happy, feels that they're not treating him properly with the injuries, they're feeling that he's maybe milking the injury and just kind of sitting out the year from treating it like a lost year. So that seems to be the allegations. It's very strange to see it happening with the Spurs.
Yeah, and, you know, given how sort of mild-mannered and quiet has been, you know, these incidents that have seemed to have happened this year, you know, have sort of seemed very much unlike him in terms of, you know, the persona that we know of him in terms of it. So it's sort of really adds to that surprising element and this, I guess, concerning element too, because it's like, well, what's going on here sort of thing? And, you know, how much is truth to it and how much is... You know, if it is, then yeah, it seems so out of character in that. So, you know, hopefully it doesn't. It's not as, you know, everything isn't as bad as it sounds in that. But yeah, it is a concerning element. And yeah, like I said, with the Spurs, they're very much, you know, have that reputation of being well managed and. Not having the sideshow drama of it all, like it's a Hollywood soap opera and all that stuff, so it's a little bit disheartening.
I don't think they've actually had dysfunction like that since Dennis Rodman was in town back in 1995 and was butting heads with Greg Popovich and, what's his name, Bob Hill?
Oh, yep.
Bob Hill, the former coach there. And Popovich back then was... not seen as the great coach and manager that he is today, because he kind of ran Rodman out of town, traded him away for Will Perdue, which worked out really well for the Bulls. so, hey, if the Spurs want to end up training Kawhi Leonard for Cristiano Felicio, you know, I'm quite happy to take Kawhi Leonard on the Bulls, I suppose. Somehow I don't think Popovich is going to make that mistake twice in his tenure with the Spurs. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a lost season for the Spurs, really. If they're healthy, maybe they can make a little bit of noise in the playoffs, but it does seem that they are slowing down a little bit. Finally, after over two decades of being one of the elite teams in the league, they're fighting for a playoff position at this point, which is something they haven't really done, again, since, I guess, maybe the early years of David Robinson's tenure. So we're going back almost 30 years, scarily, to when they were on the bubble, not counting, of course, the 97 season where injuries decimated them and they got the first pick, and which led to Duncan, of course. That was an anomaly. Everything else, they've been winning 50 games, not just the past 20 years, but even years before that, basically since David Robinson got there. So it is very rare for the franchise, but hopefully for their sake and for Leonard, they can come to an understanding. But at the moment, as much as there is denial and everything, it does sound like there's a bit of a rift there, and it is surprising, as you said, because Leonard is not an outspoken or a hothead or anything like that, not that kind of character, so... It is very strange to witness this whole situation unfolding in San Antonio, and with them struggling a bit this year, it's perhaps the biggest story, and it's again very foreign to the Spurs franchise that the biggest story is not them quietly achieving, but maybe underachieving a bit and having these problems with their star player.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, and given how well they, you know, how well they have been over the last, like you said, 20 years in that sort of sense.
And he's seeking a big extension this offseason as well, Kawhi Leonard. So, you know, that's... Yeah, maybe something very interesting is going to further happen there. And In which case, I would once again throw out Cristiano Felicio for Kawhi Leonard. I think that would work out well for everyone, especially the Bulls.
I'm happy to trade Justice Winslow for him.
But because it is a great trade for the Bulls, naturally, Garpax would never make it in a million years. they'd give away all their draft picks or something ridiculous. Or there'd be a catch. There's always a catch with them, sadly. But that has pretty much brought us to the end of episode number 242 of the NLSC podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, as always. If you did, we encourage you to subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also find us on the Stitcher app for Android and iOS devices. Search NLSC podcast, look for our logo, that will be us. You can also continue to stream the show on the NLSC, of course. As long as you're tuning in each and every week and enjoying us talking about basketball video games, that is the main thing. We also invite you to connect with us on social media. We're on Twitter at the NLSC. Facebook is facebook.com/the NLSC. Instagram is NLSC Basketball. Been posting a little bit more there recently, so connect with us there as well. And of course, the NLSC itself is NBA-live.com for all your basketball gaming needs. So that is it for this week. Until next week, I'm Andrew.
I'm Arcade.
And we're out. But unlike Kawhi Leonard, we know when we'll be back.